Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for Lydia and Courtney.
Hello.
From the rock band Raisin Hell, Persephone's Choice.
Yeah!
Lydia, Courtney, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so stoked to have you guys here. I know we've been trying to get you in for a minute. Glad you're here.
Mm-hmm. We're happy to be here.
So I know that some of us out there will be familiar with you and some won't. So try to take us. I like to start at the start. Tell me when Persephone's Choice becomes a thing to you, when you start to feel this being a thing.
Oh, dude. I mean, our first rehearsal was, I think, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was with a lineup that doesn't – it only existed for that one rehearsal. But, yeah, no, I just remember we had no idea what we were doing. Like, at all. Like, we were just like, oh, let's just start a band. And then first rehearsal, the people just weren't feeling it because we didn't know what we were doing. So, like, can't fault them. And then I just remember, like, throughout that whole experience, I was just like, Lydia knows what she's doing. And so I texted Lydia and I was like, hey, do you want to start a band again still? And she was like, who is this? She didn't know who I was.
I never saved her phone number. That was my bad.
But, no, it worked out. You know, it was just, it's just been the two of us for... It was the two of us for a little while. And
yeah, and I remember it was that we did the first, like, kind of, like, I won't even call it a rehearsal. It was more of, like, a jam at your grandma's house. And so then I just started playing guitar, and we were learning, like, these random songs from all different kinds of genres. And I remember when Courtney started to sing, I kind of, like, smirked at myself. And, or I kind of went, like, that's pretty good.
I remember it, too.
And she kind of did the same thing to me. She was just like...
This one.
So it was really neat. And then after a couple of months, I was in, you know, Chicago for a period of time. And then Courtney was just, like, so, like, passionate about starting this project. And so I was just really excited to just get back and, you know, start a female-fronted band, which even a rock band, which isn't really that common anymore,
right,
unfortunately. So I just knew that we had something special.
So talk to me a little bit about how you start playing guitar, because you bring up an interesting point that the, you know, the lane that you're in is male-dominated, has been for a while, and that's kind of old hat, whatever. But how does the inspiration to start playing guitar hit you? What is that point like for you?
Well, I've always grown up in music. My music has always been in my family. My dad is a piano player or a pianist. And I just grew up playing Rock Band and Guitar Hero, that kind of thing. And my dad... would, you know, he bought the Beatles Rock Band specifically, and I remember just being so inspired by the Beatles and just wanting to play. But then my dad being competitive, and he's like, well, I'm going to play guitar. Whoever has, like, the highest score is going to play guitar. And so then I was like, well, drums are cool. And so then I started playing drums, and then I remember asking my mom for a drum set, and then she was like, but they're too loud. Like, I don't think you're really going to take it seriously. And so then we drove to Walmart, and then we bought, like, the first act acoustic guitar.
Nice.
And, but then I was, like, only 7 or 8 years old. And so I remember my brother shooting Nerf guns at it. Like, but then really what started to really inspire me was I started getting into Led Zeppelin, and then I started listening to Rush, which completely changed my life.
That's the deep end of the pool to start in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, for, like, Guitar Hero-wise, I would probably say my first one would have to be Eddie Van Halen. Because we bought the Van Halen Guitar Hero, and my dad bought me for Christmas, but I think he really bought it for himself.
Yeah, classic.
And so then I remember when I first heard him try to play Eruption, he couldn't get through it. I was just like, this song sounds really cool. So then I went on YouTube that night, and I watched it, and I was just, like, blown away by it. You know, Eddie Van Halen, there's this guy with long hair. He's smoking a cigarette, just, like, casually playing, like, the most amazing solo I've ever heard in my life. And then as time went on, I just started getting really deeper into Van Halen, and then I was like, what inspired them? And then, you know, that whole going back to, like, 70s rock, 60s rock, really started to kind of take shape, and for me wanting to learn how to play a guitar like that. And then when I was 16, 17 years old, I saw Nita Strauss play with Alice Cooper.
Ah.
She rips.
Because at the time I was in jazz band in high school, and I was just tinkering around. I played fingerstyle, classical guitar. I learned how to play classical guitar, but then I was kind of like, Eddie Van Halen can play really fast. And then when I saw Nita Strauss play, I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, my whole world just completely opened, and then I was, like, so inspired, and then I was learning Iron Maiden songs. I got into metal, and it sounded horrible. Like, God bless my grandparents for, like, listening to me play or try to play, you know, Iron Maiden Wasted Years on, like, full blast.
Well, full blast is the only option.
And then as time went on, my mom was just like, okay, like she seems very serious about it. And so we bought my first guitar when I was 16. And then I took my parents to see Anita Strauss, and then they ended up buying me a Ibanez Jiva, like her signature. And she even signed it, and I met her like twice. And she's just
that's so awesome.
She's an absolute sweetheart of a person. So yeah, she really, Eddie Van Halen inspired me, but then Anita was like, but girls can shred too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'd say that's probably like I try to keep it as brief as possible, but, <You're good. laughs> but yeah, that's pretty much how I started playing guitar.
And then how did you start singing?
Ooh, I like to put it in a way where it's like, I can't picture a point in my life where I wasn't singing.
Ah.
Like I've been singing for like a really, really long time. I remember being in choir in elementary school, all through middle school, all through high school. And I think I was like maybe 12 or 13 when I actually started seriously being like, this is what I want to do. I would binge the X Factor audition videos, like good and bad. Like I would just watch them all. And I was just like, I really, really, really want to like go somewhere with music and go somewhere with singing. And I think I wrote my first song when I was 12.
Who were your inspirations at that point?
Stevie Nicks. Yeah, Stevie Nicks was probably the biggest reason why I started singing, because I loved Fleetwood Mac. Loved Fleetwood Mac so much.
That seems so strange to me. How do you get into that? I'm a little bit taken aback by your influences, both of you, and your roads a little bit, because it's when everything, and I'm not trying to throw shade on any popular music or current contemporary music, but there's a lot of popular music out there that does not sound anything like Stevie Nicks or Rush.
Yeah.
So how do you get into this? How do you get exposed to that?
I mean, growing up, I played softball, and on my way to my softball games, I would ride with my dad because he was also my coach. Like, I was a coach's kid, but not like coach's kid.
Technically.
But yeah, no, and he would play a lot of like older stuff on the radio. Like I remember loving Metallica because my dad played Metallica, and like he would play a lot of like the 70s, 80s kind of music, and that's kind of the rabbit hole I went through throughout middle school. Like I was introduced to like Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, like Fleetwood Mac, all of these crazy huge rock bands from like that time. And I think I do credit my dad for that quite a bit, because he is the person that like played that music for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's super fun and super cool, because especially at that point in time, like rock was like so new, like in the 60s and 70s, to where it's just, it paved the way for so much. And it's
does it awesome. Seem new to you now? Because it's so different from everything else that's out there, does the old music seem fresh to you, or do you feel like you guys just know a different corner of the universe than most people your age?
I'd say sometimes.
We are more superior.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah, no.
I feel like there's always, like, underground bands that you can discover. Like, for example, I didn't realize that Susie Quatro was Susie Quatro until many years later when I was, like, in my late teens, because she wasn't popular in the United States.
There's
right.
so much to be introduced to from that time.
And
that's, like...
And, yeah, so I'd say, especially with, like, I share a similarity with that story with Courtney, because it was also my dad. Like, I raided his CD collection. He was big into Pink Floyd and Yes. And I was trying to find, like, heavier stuff, but he was just like, well, I like metal music. And I'm like, do you really?
It was that dad that would cover the name of the song and the artist on the radio when it's playing.
Right,
and
just
yeah, my dad did the
name
same
that
thing.
Song and who sings it. Like, it's,
oh, that's
you
so
know,
awesome.
It's cool. It's cool.
But yeah, with
my mom used to do that too.
But yeah, especially with a band like Rush, my dad had a roommate in college who there was no other band. It was only Rush that was playing in the dorm. And then my dad was just like, I can't stand Rush. I can't take it anymore. And so then me being the rebellious teen that I was, I put on Moving Pictures on full blast in my house. And I was like, this is the best album I've ever listened to. And then I played A Farewell to Kings. And then I started getting into record collecting. So then I went to record stores and I just bought all kinds of Rush. So... Kudos to my dad for getting me into Rush.
I'm not a big Rush fan.
But honestly, kudos for my dad for getting me into Rush, because I rebelled enough to be able to appreciate them the way that I do now.
Right.
And even when we do long road trips, I sometimes put Rush on just to bother her. So it
works. Rush and show tunes.
Rush, I'm there. Show tunes, I might be out.
Fun fact, I was in musical theater in high school and a little bit in college.
I was too. It was fun.
This is a question I like to ask people that are in your positions who are trying to parlay your creativity beyond school. How important did you find it that you were able to do things like jazz guitar or any types of performing theater earlier?
So important. So important. Because I remember very specifically just like it provided so much more drive for me because I had that outlet and because I was able to do it also with my friends. Mm-hmm. Like to just be able to be like, this is my time where I can express myself and I can learn from it too.
Right.
Like there's like technique and stuff and there's theory and I'm not good at theory, so I can't like, you know, I didn't carry it with me, but like
theory is part just, black magic.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say it's extremely important because I've known kids that, you know, weren't fortunate to be able to afford an instrument. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get one was from school. And so even when I hear like, you know, schools are losing their music department or they're losing their arts department, it really makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think Youngblood made a video talking about it where he was just like, you could have the next Bowie, you could have the next best thing, but if they don't have access to an instrument, then how could they be able to express themselves? Mm-hmm. And so I really connected when he said that because I do know a few friends of mine who the only way that they were able to get an instrument was through school. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and I think it's important for you, for people like you all to share that because I think people on the outside kind of, it's very easy to lose the perspective about how important mm-hmm. having things like that can be.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, like you said, when you have your outlet, it can make you have more drive in the rest of your life too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it seems like you two both had a pretty clear template of Rock Band.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you talk to the majority of like the bands like in our scene, they will most likely say that they did play Rock Band or Guitar Hero at some point in their life.
Well, that's funny that you say that. I mean literally Rock Band, like Led Zeppelin,
yeah,
like Rush,
yeah.
Like actual, like the true template of a rock band was something you two were familiar with.
Yeah.
Did you feel like, I don't know any other way to put it, did you feel outcasty in that regard? And is that partly what brought you together?
It's less and less the older you get, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. Like, the younger you are when you're like, oh, I like, you know, the oldies and stuff like that, you do kind of become a little bit, like, not ostracized, but, like...
You're kind of on your own.
People are, like, kind of just, like, picking on you. They're like, oh, they like grandma music. And it's, you know, but the older you get, I think the more you realize, like, how important and impactful those bands are. And it breaks my heart when people say rock is dead.
It's not.
Breaks my heart when people say rock is dead. Because it's just like, well, it's that too, but it's just like.
It's sad.
What do you think contributes to that feeling right now?
I don't know.
That's a great question. I just think it's because like a lot of the music that's being made is not really like they're recording artists. Like most artists don't even write their own music these days. They're just kind of singing on top of what's already been recorded or written for them. But I do give credit to artists like Olivia Rodrigo and Taylor Swift who do write their own music.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes when you go on Spotify or if you go to, you know, the person, you know, the artist of a song, usually there's like 10 different names to the song.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to like Queen or like Led Zeppelin, like who wrote Bohemian Rhapsody, it's, you know,
the four of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's performed by Queen, written by the four of, you know, members of Queen. So, but yeah, I don't think rock is dead. I just think that for some reason we're just trying to figure out how to, I guess, make it more exciting again, how to get people to want to listen to it again. Because I have noticed that there has been, you know, some interest where people are kind of almost embarrassed that to say that they listen to Metallica or the Rolling Stones because they're going to feel that they're going to be ostracized from school being like, but you don't listen to rap or you don't listen to this. And it's just like, you should be able to feel free to listen to whatever you want without feeling judged by other people.
It does feel a little gatekeepy too.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. I would like for there to be more space to be had for like younger artists because when people think of like classic rock music, they think of the people that lived in that time versus now. And I feel like it's just kind of, it's very limiting to be like, oh, rock is dead. Like, but we're here doing it too. Like, it's like, this is, you know, what we want to do. And it, you know, it kind of sucks, but we'd like to think that we change people's opinions about it a little bit every once in a while. So.
Yeah. Amen to that. And that was going to lead me to my next question. You said a lot of the excitement is lost from it. And personally, as a rock fan myself, I can't hide it. I agree with you. I think a lot of the excitement is lost.
Yeah.
But I think there are some of the elements of maybe excitement, maybe danger, maybe Ronnie Radke, whatever you think about that guy, coming back into the world. What do you guys feel like when you get out there and play rock music for people?
Best feeling it's so ever, fun. Dude.
It's really fun.
It's the best. I remember our first show.
You were nervous.
I was so nervous. Like, I went, like, nonverbal for, like, a good 30 minutes before we went on. But I remember after playing our first song of our first show, I was just like, I get it. Like, this is exactly, like, why people do this, because it's just the best feeling. Mm-hmm. It's, I can't even put into words how, like, just fun. It's so fun.
Do you
it's
feel so like fun. You're throwing a curveball playing rock music?
As girls, yes.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, yeah, that's a good point.
Because I feel like we do take a little bit from a lot of different sources, and mm-hmm. we kind of blend it into our own thing. Like, when people ask us what genre we play, I just say rock. Because, like, we can go in any direction with any of our songs. Like, we can go, like, in a more southern rock direction, or we can go in a more indie rock direction, or just, like, I feel like we kind of check too many boxes for us to be able to narrow it down to any subgenre rather than rock.
Yeah, plus I'm of the opinion that genre is usually what other people tell you.
Right.
Mm. It's like, you don't go around telling people that you're talented. It's usually what other people yeah. tell you. So I'm like, if somebody says that we're metal, then great. I don't really see it. But if you think that we are, then fine. But yeah. That's why we pretty much just label ourselves as just a rock band.
It's subjective.
It's very subjective. But yeah. That's pretty much all I can say to that. And, like, our first show was really fun because all of our friends were there.
Oh, yeah. It was the best.
They were just like, oh, my God, it's a female lead guitar player. And, like, yeah. She plays bass and sings. This is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Because I love going to shows and, like, watching. Like, because before we were playing shows, like, I was pretty active in the local scene, at least in Tampa, because Tampa, Bradenton's growing. Like,
right.
Currently, like, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, but with Oscura and things like that. Yeah,
and I was living in Tampa for a while, and I would go to shows every weekend, and I would become friends with, just naturally, like, with the other musicians, because I love sharing the same level of ambition with other people. So, like, watching my friends do what they want to do, and it happens to be the same thing that I want to do, it's so cool how, like, full circle it comes.
Yeah, plus I love that we don't really have to draw inspiration from bigger bands. We can actually draw inspiration from much smaller bands.
Like our friends.
Like our friends who
Well, you already had the big band thing taken care of. Yeah. Thanks to your dads.
Yeah, pretty much.
The dads took care of that part.
The dads got it.
So, and it's really cool when we wanted to do it, like rock music and trying to, you know, make it more, I guess, like accessible to people to listen to it instead of like being so dug deep in like the deep cut of Spotify.
Right.
It's just really neat to see that there are other rock bands out there these days specifically who share that same passion with us and who share the same influences. Mm-hmm. We just happen to be women. So.
Yeah, this is the curveball. So how do you handle your live performances? You play as a three-piece?
Yeah. Yes. we started as a three-piece. I was doing bass and vocals. Lydia was on guitar. And we had our drummer, our first show, we had a fill-in. And then we played as a three-piece for a while until we started playing with Jacob, who was our drummer. And then his brother Caleb joined. And then they both needed to focus on school. So we're kind of in between adding new members right now. But for the most part, it's been a three-piece. We were a four-piece for a little bit, but we're back to three to just kind of...
But we did hold really good. We did hold really good auditions, though.
Yeah.
So we do have some really good prospects to be in for Sunday's Choice. Two of which could be women, which I'm excited because we can be an all female rock band, which is going to be really cool.
Yeah, that's a whole nother
layer of it.
Yeah, exactly. So you play bass and sing. Mm-hmm. I always have to ask about that whenever I find somebody that plays bass and sings.
It's rough.
That's where I was going with this. How do you find that?
It's
a unique thing.
It's unique. It's badass in its own way. Or, sorry, can I say
that? No, you're good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we're good.
It's, you know, it's cool in its own way because it's just like, it's one, very uncommon to see a bass playing front woman.
Right.
And two, it's just really uncommon to see a bass playing girl. Like, and it's, you know, I hate to like use it in that way, but.
Right.
It's cool. I like going feral mode and, like, running around the stage and, like, just, like, focusing on vocals, like, that's super fun for me. And I feel like sometimes when I play bass, I'm kind of married to the mic stand mm-hmm. in a way where I don't have as much freedom. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know. It's kind of cool to just be like,
just bobbing around. But, yeah, well, and there's some of the three-piece magic in bands like Rush and... Yep.
The Police.
Yeah, and even Led Zeppelin to some degree. Mm-hmm. If, you know, Robert Plant, you know, he's an adjunct.
Yeah.
We'll call him adjunct. So how do you handle the writing then? Do you write just the two of you since you can play bass and you have a general idea what you want out of the songs?
For the most part,
yeah. So typically Courtney comes to me with an idea. Usually they're full songs, which I appreciate. And she's basically like, how do I make this interesting? And so then I'm just like, I can have fun with chords and really weird sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how one of our singles was written, called Hold Me Down. She just came to us with this idea of a song because we were actually short in the set for, you know, our very first show. And so she came in and she sang Hold Me Down a cappella. And then in my mind, I was kind of like, I sing like kind of chords and like a melody to it just to kind of complement her vocals. And so then I just play around. And then sometimes when I'm playing, she would look at me like, no. And then sometimes she would be like, mm-hmm, that.
That's the one.
And so then I'm like, okay, mark that in my notebook.
I'll just
and
so yell, then, I like that.
Like sometimes like we would just rehearse and then I would just throw in some random stuff because Courtney has a really good ear for music, I realized. And she would just kind of, so then she would kind of just be like, no. But then it makes me feel really good when I come up with something really cool. And then she's like, mm-hmm. So it is really like a complimenting way that we write music. And she wrote Waterfall and she sent me a video of herself crying over it. And I was just like, okay. And so I remember one time she said, I want you to make it sound like your guitar is crying. And so then I just kind of started playing the melody on the guitar. And then we both were just like, yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a really fun process the way we write music. Mm-hmm. We even wrote two songs. We're starting to finish one, and then we started writing another one at my house, over like a piano and like an acoustic guitar.
Yeah,
and so it was really fun. So
it's fun.
We enjoy it.
So you're both multi-instrumentalists, or you play piano?
I'm not proficient at it. I can kind of put my fingers on the keys and make a sound. That's pretty much
because you can hear it in your head first.
Yeah. It's so strange. Most of the time when I write songs, there's no music. I'll just have, like, a melody in, like, words and everything in my head, and I'll structure it in my noggin. And then I'll put my hands on an instrument, and then I'll just be like, oh, this fits here. Or I'll, like, hum it because I can hear it in my head, and then I'll just find it. I'm not, like, crazy good at it, but it gets the job done. So
yeah, that's a unique way to do it, to start with vocals first. Always start that way?
Not
or
always.
You have to this point?
Sometimes I come up with a riff or an idea, and then she's like, put a pin in that because that might work with something else that I'm writing. And so then, you know, that's typically how sometimes that could work out.
Like, we'll throw a riff into something that, like, we're working on. Like, say, like, she wrote a riff like 3 months ago and I'm writing a song now, and then I'm just like, oh, let's go back to this and put it on here, and then we find a home for it, and
right.
It works. And it's really, really, I think it works really well.
Pretty notorious for the endless voice memos of riffs. But I finally started writing a decent song, because I feel like for me it was like a dirty faucet. Like, when you start writing, it's, you kind of have dirty water at first, and then as you keep writing, it starts to finally come out clear. I feel like that's me.
Yeah, agreed.
You're doing great.
And so I just, you know, started showing Courtney this really cool, like, chord progression on the acoustic guitar, and then I just started singing along to it. I'm not really much of a singer, but then she was just like, that's really good. I might mess with the words, but that's really good. And so I was like, that's good. So
teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, so... We do like to consider ourselves as, like, sisterly team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ding.
Love it. So then once you get the teamwork, making the dream work, and you've got the fundamentals together, you've got your structures of your song together, how do you handle recording? I know you got a couple singles out now, right?
Yeah, we actually work with our friend. His name's Steven. He's in two other bands up in Tampa, but he has helped us out so much. I remember we played our third show with his band. They are called Mortal Sons. But he came up to us afterwards and he was like, I want to work with you guys. He was like, I want to have you in. I want to record. I want to produce something for you guys. And, you know, ever since our first song that we recorded with him, we recorded that in one night. From 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. Like, we were just in the studio with him just recording. And he's phenomenal. He's one of our closest friends, I think. And he takes good care of us. And he's...
Yeah.
He adds his own flavor into things, too. Like, he'll just be like, I think this would go here. And I'm like, you know, we're all just on board with everything, and it's super, super fun. Mm-hmm. Super fun.
Yep, I was going to say something, and then my mind up.
So you track just the two of you, and then just have someone come in and play the drums or program the drums, or your producer or engineer helps you?
Jacob came in and recorded.
Jacob was playing with us when we were recording, so he filled in. He was playing his drum parts and everything like that, but, you know, it's everyone in the band. We haven't really brought in any session musicians or done anything that hasn't been done by our own hands, if that makes sense. Like, we haven't really played with, like, adding computer stuff into it and everything like that.
We like to keep it as more just like raw as possible, like live drums, you know, mic'd up amps.
Oh, amen to that.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how we roll.
Well, I mean, and that's becoming a big differentiation between recordings. Is there moving air or not?
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. I feel like it sounds more real to have it be done
in a
way that you're just recording it yourself versus... Because if a song sounds too perfect, then it's just like, ugh.
Plus, it's so much easier to recreate it on stage when in a live setting. Because with our first single, I admit, I did DI it. And then I realized that I can't figure out how to recreate the tone that I had in the studio versus on stage. Because then some people are like, it sounds different. And I'm just like, I'm twisting every knob that I can think of to try and make it sound like
it's like a scientist.
But the issue is that like the plugins that are on the computer is so different than what I could just go to the store and buy without paying for like, what is it, a Kemper?
Or a Quad Cortex or fill in the blank.
So then I was like, Steven? He was like, yep. And I'm like, we're miking up my amps. And I'm using my pedals. He was just like, fair.
He
took it like a champ.
It does make life easier in a lot of ways for sure. Mm-hmm. So when you track, do you track live and play full band and put it down, or do you multi-track?
Parts by parts.
Okay.
Jacob is honestly a beast because he would record his drum parts like three times, and then like usually like the first one would be great.
Right.
But then we like to do like two more just to be on the safe side. So then we do drums, and then we would do bass just to get the rhythm section down. And then we do rhythm guitars, and then we would add lead guitar, and then usually vocals. Lead guitar and vocals are kind of like you can do that.
Yeah, right.
Because it doesn't really take that long.
Right.
Like, I know, like...
Thankfully.
For one of the tracks that we're working on now, I know it has, like, you know, we double-track the guitars, so I don't just copy and paste it. Like, I actually go in and, you know,
play it twice.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's really tedious, but, like, the end result of it just sounds so much better.
Oh, worth it.
Because it sounds like two different guitar players, because it's like, I can't play the exact same way that I did the first time. Mm-hmm. We pretty much do that, and then the vocals and, like, the harmonies and, like, the little sprinkles, we usually save that towards, like, the very
end. Hands-on. Very hands-on.
I was wondering if maybe you took it full old school and recorded live.
No. If we had the space, I'd be down for it, but we don't have quite a big enough space to fit everybody in the same room and to do that.
I'm sure Steven would be totally down for that.
He would.
We just need to figure out, like, how we would do that.
So that brings me to, now you have your recordings. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about the way releasing music works now, especially for a new band.
Ooh.
DistroKid.
Yeah, DistroKid has saved our life. But yeah, it's like basically just through third-party stuff. But
do you feel weird? I shouldn't say weird. Do you feel obligated to be recording singles and putting out singles because it's so advantageous to be putting out content every month,
sometimes,
every 6 weeks, or do you want to write an album?
We're trying to find a balance between, like, what feels artistically right for us versus what gets the most views or the most clicks. We are actually releasing an EP this year, which is super, super exciting because it's kind of a collection of all of the songs that we've had since we started. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, hopefully it's going to allow us to open a new chapter for ourselves and really just like hone in on like the sound that we feel fits us best because our first year, we just turned one like last month. And so like our first year was basically just us trying to like
get as many shows as possible
and just kind of like establish something for ourselves too. That way it doesn't all fall on deaf ears, but it still feels genuine to us to where we're not trying to like sell out just for like the views kind of thing.
I don't mean to cut you off there, but this is something I'm actually very interested in. lots of times fresh bands would spend that first year trying to play as many shows mm-hmm. as they could. But we're very much in a time now where lots of bands will spend their first year or longer.
Just recording.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just hold up, just writing, just recording. So talk to me a little bit about why you guys wanted to go the route and of getting yourself on stage and what that did for you.
Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this opportunity to give a shout out to our number one supporter, Tweed Suit Shop.
Hey guys, I'm Donald with Tweeds. If you're ever in the market for a custom suit, tuxedo, sport coat, whatever it might be, we'd love the opportunity for you to come in, take all your measurements, make sure we get you the perfect fit and the perfect look. We'd love to see you at one of our locations.
So remember, if you want to get yourself fresh like this, tip to tail, see Tweeds at one of their locations in Sarasota, St. Pete, or Tampa. Please enjoy the rest of the episode.
Because at least for me, I just love playing live. I spent, you know, the majority of my late teens, early 20s playing in my bedroom to a camera. And I kind of was starting to get a little bit defeated about it because then I was like, nobody's really watching my content. I don't know what I'm doing differently versus other people that are getting like hundreds of thousands of views and like thousands of subscribers. Mm-hmm. But then I remember there was a prominent moment where I was just like, do I really want to do this? Like, do I really want to be a bedroom guitar player? But then the issue was, is that like, I didn't have a band. And so then finally when I met Courtney and we were starting to get a band together, I was like, the only thing I really want is just to play on stage because there's nothing quite like it. It's just so much different when you're connecting with a real person versus just, you know, sending out a bunch of music, you know, into an empty void, basically. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's part of the reason why like our first two singles did so well is because people feel like that human connection to us versus us just being like this mystery band just like releasing mm-hmm. music. And I think honestly the way that we're doing it is pretty old school and old fashioned. But I love it because it just it helps you build relationships, it helps you build connections.
Oh, we learned so much.
Talk to me a little about that. What do you feel like you learned in that first year putting yourself on the stage instead of just hiding in the lab?
Gosh, so much. So we do everything ourselves. All of the merch we've done ourselves. Well, I mean,
customing.
buy through a company. But like we fund it all ourselves. We book our own shows. We post our own stuff on our socials. Like all of it's like very DIY and like from the ground up. And I think like, I don't know, like it's, you think you understand what you're doing and then you don't. Like you don't know anything. And it's just, you know, you just kind of have to learn as you go, which is really, really beneficial. Like I'm very, very proud of us because it's just like we did put the work in mm-hmm. and, you know, and it's coming to a point where it's like paying off in like little ways and it feels great.
Also, we just don't really take no for an answer.
Yeah.
Because if somebody tells us no, we're going to be like, but we will. Because I remember I talked to this guy, to one of the bands that we were playing with at the time. I don't even remember that well, but he was just like, man, Courtney's got you working. And I was just like, but I love it. And so we've just been consistently, even when we're not on stage, we're still actively doing stuff. And now we've almost done tracking our EP, and I'm excited mm-hmm. about it. And so once that gets out, people are like, oh, they work. Like, mm-hmm. this band works. Mm-hmm. I remember even, I'm going to go back to Rush. But, I remember Geddy Lee talking about it, from the documentary Beyond the Lighted Stage. He was just like, say what you want about Kiss, but there's no harder working band than Kiss. And so then I kind of took that to heart, and I was just like, I feel like sometimes success comes from just how hard you're willing to work for it.
Mm.
And definitely Courtney is ambitious. I share that same ambition with her. And so like us together is just like,
it fits so well.
It's just really fun.
Well, you mentioned something really important, keeping the will to do it mm-hmm. because it is something that, especially when you're doing it the way y'all are doing it, where you're putting everything into it, you can mm-hmm. get taxed pretty quickly.
It's very taxing.
It's draining.
Yeah.
But it's worth it. I it's like, you know, you just kind of have to have that drive in you to just be like, cause I know for me, and we both share the same like position on it where it's just like it's this or nothing, like, and it's just I can't picture anything else for myself, and I'm sure Lydia can say the same for herself where it's like mm-hmm. I can't imagine doing anything other than music for the rest of my life. And so I think it's just kind of like that you've got nothing to lose kind of position where it's just like you're gonna make it happen no matter how long it takes, no matter how much work goes into it, like mm-hmm. it's going to happen, and it's, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Well, because you get to get on stage and you know what that's like.
Even if we just play to the bartenders, it's still a fun time.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Because even we have bartenders asking us for t-shirts.
Yeah, it's and so
like,
cool.
I'm like, they're still human beings. Like, I don't, sometimes, like, of course we have those shows where we only play to, like, our friends. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, the wait staff or whoever. But they're still people and they're still hearing our music. And mm-hmm. we're still playing. So it doesn't really matter to me how many people show up. It's just, I'm just like, I'm just happy to be on the stage. And now I can, mm-hmm. you know, mess up and nobody would really care. You know?
Well, talk to me a little bit about like the, you know, you were talking about when you had the bedroom guitarist phase and that started to grind itself out. No matter how much you love it, at some points you have to have that crisis of faith or that, oh shit, what the fuck am I doing here moment. What are those moments like when they hit you when you're, you know, you guys are so green? It's a lot of new things uh-huh. going on.
I know for me that I just kind of go back to what inspires me because I feel like inspiration is such a huge motivator mm-hmm. sometimes. Mm. So I would go back and watch documentaries of my favorite bands. And I would kind of, and then I recently read Geddy Lee's book, like again, talking about Rush. But I remember like there's some bands that just take, they're like late bloomers in my opinion. And sometimes it just takes a little bit longer and that's okay. And then some bands, it just happens instantly. And I just feel like sometimes it always comes down to who's willing to work the hardest. And I feel like when you have inspiration, that's kind of like driving you. And you kind of go back to what made you feel inspired in the first place. I feel like that pushes you from, like, those really dark moments where you're just mm-hmm. like, what's the point? Into being like, but if they can do it, so can I. And also mm-hmm. manifesting. Like, yeah. I feel like manifesting is so underrated and not talked about enough these days. But where it's like, Courtney and I would literally sometimes manifest together.
All that hippie woo-woo stuff. And
we would just, we would, like, yeah. sit in, like, the back of, like, her her grandparents' house. And we just, like, look up in the sky and we're just like, universe.
We're doing it.
We're yeah. doing it.
We're doing it.
And it's been treating us well so far. And I feel like we do have, you know, the little success that we do. It's been really cool to see, mm-hmm. to connect with people in that way. And even if we connect with one person and inspires them in some way, then that's enough for me.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that being patient in the process yeah. is something you've learned in this last year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And I'm the most impatient person. I'm so impatient.
Yep.
But it's just, you know, it does remind you to just be like, okay, everything's, I'm exactly where I need to be right now. Like, everything is happening the way it's meant to. I'm learning these lessons because they're essential to move forward and to progress with it. Because if we were thrown into it and just, you know, like the overnight thing and we didn't play that first year of shows or we didn't have that year of experience doing all of this stuff, like, oh my gosh, we would combust. I don't know what we would do because we'd be... We wouldn't have any of the knowledge that we have now, which I think is what makes it, like, that's the part that pushes me the most because it's just like, okay, like, I'm in my learning phase right now. We're mm-hmm. figuring out the ins and outs of it just so that way we are ready when it does happen.
That so. Actually brings up a thing, something that I'm very interested in for younger musicians, people mm-hmm. in your generation. You learned it, some of these it's mm-hmm. out there in the real world, playing the shows, meeting the people, whatever. But you have YouTube and all the information at your fingertips where you can literally Google search how to be an upstart band.
Yeah.
How much of a difference have you found it with the – because you've inevitably learned some things from mm-hmm. online. Like you said, you've looked up some things, read some documentaries, whatever. What is the big forks in the road that you've seen taking this other route and not just – trying to look up how we be a band.
I think the biggest thing is like the connections with it and the friends that we've made through like asking questions or like doing things for the first time, because it's like if you're, and I mean,
it's information granted, overload.
Granted, like doing stuff like through the YouTube way and online, like that's how I learned how to play certain songs on bass or guitar and stuff like that. You know, like that is, we are at a point in the world right now where that's easily accessible and like, do it. Like, I've done it. Everybody does it. But, like, the difference between doing that and actually, like, going out and learning it yourself is just, I think, that human connection, which is where it just makes it so much more fun mm-hmm. and enjoyable to, like, be connected with other people while you're learning. Because then we have so many people in our lives that take on, like, almost a mentor position without actually, like, taking that on, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. we look up to so many different people just because we have those experience with them Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest difference for me is just that connection aspect of it and just having those.
I feel like it's so different actually talking to somebody versus like, you know, just information overload from a random person on YouTube.
Right.
Versus somebody that actually knows us, who knows our situation, who knows that, you know, what we're strong at or whatever. There is an element of just being, also just making friends is so important, I think, especially in our scene and just supporting other bands, you know, that are playing shows. Because sometimes Courtney and I would even go out of our way to go to shows and just watch. We wouldn't even be booked on the show, but we would just want to go and support our friends. Because then it's kind of like, oh, the band is like, oh, but the girls from Persephone's Choice are here. It makes me want to go tell my friends to go to their shows. So it's kind of like building a community in that sense. So, and honestly, I just go because I just really enjoy the music, you know. But I go when I want to get my heavy metal fix. I sometimes go to, like, heavier shows. Like,
I sit the heavy ones out. It's a little too much for me.
Well, you can ease into it. You got time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rome wasn't built in a heavy metal day.
No, it wasn't.
So you got the EP. When are you going to think you're going to get that out?
End of the year, probably. We're thinking like November, December time. But we do have a couple other singles that we're going to be releasing leading up to it just to kind of build into that. Because I think the last single we released was December, so it's been about 6 months. So we're due for some stuff to be out.
Yeah, well, okay. So that kind of makes me want to cycle back to this question. I don't know if you exactly answered it or if we distracted one another.
Oh, sorry.
No. How do you feel about the obligation of playing this singles game, that all this streaming platform kind of obligates you to keep pumping out singles, especially when you're a duo or a band in any capacity that can write an album? You can write an EP. Mm-hmm. You don't have to keep churning out singles. They just seem to make you have to.
I think it's fun building up hype around bigger things, I feel like. Like, I think having the singles leading up to an album is just kind of like, oh, here's a little taste. Oh, here's a little more taste. Here's the whole, like, 10-course meal. Like, I think in a way that it's just like, ooh, we're getting excited. Ooh, something's happening. Ooh. And then it happens, and it's just like, it's a nice, yay.
So you look at it more in the traditional sense of releasing a couple singles leading up to releasing an album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not just perpetually releasing singles.
No,
well, I mean, honestly, if you go into, you know, a couple of bands that I'm familiar with, if you go into their first debut single, like album release, you look at their streams and like their first three songs tend to be like the highest streams. And then as it kind of gets deeper and deeper into the album, the streams get smaller and smaller and smaller. So it looks like an upside down triangle to me.
Right.
So I feel like if we build up enough hype with the singles that are going to be like on the actual EP, then it's like more people are going to be prone to be like, oh, but I want to stick around and listen to this song. So that I guess it's kind of like a more of like a strategy of like how we're trying to get people to listen to our music just because like we're so brand new.
Right.
And I do know bands that are able to pump out single after single after single after single, but for us, at least this is like how I see it. Sometimes like Steven has other responsibilities or like we have other things that we need to take care of, and so it's just a little difficult for us to kind of get us all together in a studio space and like record, which honestly makes us, I think, more prone to perfecting our parts and to making sure that as soon as we hit record, that we are tight, that we know our parts very well so that we can, you know, finish that and move on. So I honestly, I think recording made us better musicians, in my opinion. So
it all works hand in hand, which is super cool.
So do you feel like the pressure that some content creators or musicians and artists feel like if I don't keep things coming out all the time, I'm losing relevancy? Yeah. Or do you guys kind of think, you know, I don't give a shit. I'm going to do this the way I see fit. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, we get there when we get there.
Yeah, I think it's trying to find a balance of it because it is, you know, it is so different today with like the internet and TikTok and Instagram and all of this other, all of these other platforms. And it's, you know, I think it's about finding that balance of just like, we're not going to be heartbroken or devastated if we don't get enough views, but at least we're still releasing our stuff. But at the same time, we do have to keep in mind, like, these views is an opportunity for us to be able to do this for a living. So it's kind of finding that like middle ground of just like, how many, like, how much are we relying on a certain aspect of it versus mm-hmm. how much is actually, like, genuine to us? So I think
we just make the music that we like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of my question. How do you find the line between how much you can care about that sort of thing that you don't care about and not let it cross into the thing you do care about?
I just look to the bands that, you know, from 40, 50 years ago, they didn't really care. They were able to make new genres and new sounds just based off of being like, we know what you want us to do and we don't care. Like, we don't want to, like, for example, like, even with Queen, I remember, like, from Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie, he's like, we don't want to just reproduce Killer Queen. We want to do our own thing.
Right.
And that became A Night at the Opera. And I look up to, you know, musicians who just didn't really care what other people said. It was just like, I just want to do what I want to make, and if nobody listens to it, then so be it. Mm. And I feel like that's very similar to us, because, like, people would come up to us and be like, I really like your guys's vibe. I think that people say that because we just make music that we enjoy and that we like, and that we're not really trying to be, like, mainstream, like, if that makes us sound like, I don't know, hipster. I pretty much just view it as, like, music as, like, an open diary, basically. Mm. And we just are letting people in, and if they connect with us, great. And if not, we're still writing music that is genuine to us.
Yeah.
Well, how do you two harbor the creative freedom between one another to do that? And how did you develop the trust to do that?
Oof. It took time.
It did take some time.
It took time.
Because I went into it with kind of a perfectionist mindset where I was just like, it has to sound this way. But then, you know, taking a step back from it and, like, loosening the reins a little bit on it.
Right.
Like, it's perfect now. Like, it's so seamless. It's so fun. Because, mm-hmm. like, she shreds.
Sometimes, like, I try my best not too much. I remember Nita Strauss had, like, an interview where she was just, like, when she played an Alice Cooper, I think one of the guitar players looked at her and was just like, okay, play exactly what you are, but cut all those notes in half.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like how I viewed, you know, because I was in a metal band for about a year before joining or starting the band with you. And so then I was just like, and then Courtney was like, just.
I think I had that same conversation with you where I was just like, that, but just a little less.
Just like just a little less. And so then I started listening to more blues artists, and then I was like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I still shred occasionally just to get it out.
Well, you got it.
You just have to.
Yeah. Turn the gain all the way up.
All work and no shredding makes dull playing. So how do you – that's kind of the thing. Like, the creative freedom that you guys have is sort of unique and sort of, I guess, indicative of the fact that it's based around the two of you. Mm-hmm. How do you nurture that in one another when you're writing?
I think I take a little piece of you and you take a little piece of me.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like, I feel like, can Courtney sing this? Like, can she connect with what I'm trying to write or come up with? Or, like, a piece of, you know, a chord progression or something. And then she would kind of come to me for something. And then I remember you started getting a little bit upset with me when I was like, can we make it heavier?
Oh, I was like, I can't scream. I can't.
Because I was like, can you imagine, like, in the middle of, like, one of our songs, it's just, like, a full metal breakdown.
And then I'll just go, bleh. But, yeah, no, that's the one thing that I know I can't do. I can't, like, healthily scream.
Well, just get a bullhorn and do it, like, Scott Weiland style. Yeah. Old school 90s style. Mm-hmm. That'll work.
Yeah, no, I think we found a really good balance. Because
I've known you for how long? 2 years now?
2 years now, baby.
So I feel like with Courtney and I knowing each other so well, we can kind of take a little piece of each other. And that's pretty much how I see it.
I think it's well balanced.
I don't want to say Lennon and McCartney, but it does kind of feel like that.
Well, if you can give one another that freedom where you don't get self-conscious in the creating process, mm-hmm. that's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's very cool. And that you've been able to meld some styles and find a happy medium isn't an easy thing to do either, because somebody inevitably gets precious about their part.
Yeah,
I know that I can be stubborn sometimes with my part.
And that's okay. Like, I'll just be like, okay, yeah, I understand. Because even when I write songs, I'll just think to myself, I'm like, will Lydia have fun with this? Like, because that's important for me. Like, the same way that she's like, can she sing this? I'll be like, can she, like, have the freedom to, like, do what she really wants to do with it? And I think, like, keeping each other in mind while also, like, using each other as, like, inspiration in a way, it just, all the pieces fit together perfectly.
Yeah, very cool. The 4-minute solo section usually never goes through, but
well, you can have a solo record for that. The Shred-a-thon. Lydia's Shred-a-thon, parts Lydia's one Shred-a-thon. Through 666.
That's they'll, so funny.
We'll get them all.
Steve, yeah. Do you need anybody on the road with you?
Well, I know we kind of dug a little bit deep. Let's kind of get you out of here on something fun. Okay. You got an EP coming up at the end of the year and some mm-hmm. singles in between. I always like to ask bands this question, not to see who their favorite artists are, but to see who they envision themselves on stage with as being the most complimentary for their art. If you could sell your package to the world, who's your teammate? So if you got a fantasy EP release party between now and the end of the year, who's the two acts you guys put on with you?
Oh, gosh.
I can't even answer that question. That's like...
We're just going to go ahead and say Rush is there and you can pick two other ones.
If Neil somehow was able to be, you know, revived and be with us, then...
Or we'll get Danny Carey in a Neil Peart mask.
Honestly, there's this band that Courtney and I really love. They're called Thunder Pussy.
Yeah?
Ooh, yeah.
They're super awesome. It's an all-female band and we cover one of their songs. It's Speed Queen. And I feel like... us with them would be super sick.
Oh, the energy would be insane.
So I would honestly, for me, it would have to be like Thunder Pussy.
Thunder Pussy would be awesome.
But I would have to say a band either dead or alive, Rush, probably. Even though like it would be really unique to have like that kind of vibe on there. But
nothing wrong with a unique vibe.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I want to say Dolly Parton, but like it just doesn't.
That would be cool.
Like cover all
you
genres.
Dolly Parton and Rush. That would be there.
An eclectic bunch. But
oh my goodness! You could play the fingernails.
The fingernails. I forgot she did that. But yeah, so many people come to mind.
Heart, the Runaways.
Heart would be dream. I think Heart for sure. Mm-hmm. Thank you for reminding me.
Oh, you also said like Rival Sons.
Oh, Rival Sons too. So many.
Well, that gives people watching this a much better idea of where you might sit and what a hell of a party with Persephone's Choice would look like.
We cover a broad spectrum.
I love that. I can't wait to see you guys live. I can't thank you enough for coming down and sharing with me,
Lydia, Courtney.
Yeah, when you guys get the EP out or you get anything coming, you guys always got to welcome. You're part of the K of the family now. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome.
It was so nice to meet you.
Yeah, you as well.